Spawnily is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness, because we are the culture. Welcome to Bricago, y'all.
What's good, everybody in Bricago? We have a really cool interview for you, all of you today. We have a couple of folks who have been working really hard on a game that you might have heard called Diablo 4. I am super excited to have Naz and Harrison on with me today. Both of you, thank you for ruining my life. I want to say this early on. I want to say that there have now been times scheduled on my work calendar and my home calendar to understand that I will be away. I will be gone. I'll be in sanctuary. I'll be getting it in, beating everything up that I possibly can. How are you two doing? I know we're still in the middle of getting ready for launch. We're getting ready for things to kind of come out. How are you both doing?
I'm really excited. I am super excited for the game to finally come out and be in the hands of players because, as Harrison knows, we've been working super, super hard on this game. And yeah. There's years of love and passion poured into it, so...
Yeah. It's been a long time coming, and now we're in like the victory lap. You know, we're finally getting to the. It's been a long time since the BlizzCon 2019 reveal, and a long time before that, honestly. And so, getting it to a place where we're like, yeah, it's like it's a video game. It's ready to go. Like people are playing it. It's happening. Was a really nice sort of victory lap for us. So we're really, really, really excited to get it into people's hands. We're like chomping at the bit to just like watch people play the stuff that we've like agonized over for a number of years.
No doubt. I know as a part of that game dev space, I've been in there. I've seen the conversations that happen between, you know, all of the different teams and how they're all coordinating and figuring out the ways to kind of best get things out into the world. You know, we're going to be talking today about campaign. We're going to be talking about quests, kind of talking about zone design, which I'm really excited about because I think for a game like this is where all of those layers really get a chance to shine in a lot of really big ways. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about, like, what's the hardest layer of your jobs when it comes to creating compelling campaign stories? I think there's always this interesting balance that you wind up having to figure out, that is the balance of keeping the uber fan satiated and excited while also being able to onboard new players and have them kind of experience Diablo maybe for the first time. What's the conversation like in studio for when you're having those initial conversations, you know, when before you even start to build anything? I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Harrison, I'll let you start here.
That's fine. It's a constant conversation. Trying to figure out how we tell a compelling story in Diablo 4. If this is your first Diablo game, right? We don't want to overload you with proper noun soup of like, who are these characters and what's going on? And I don't understand the backstories and all these names are coming at me. Sanctuary and Lorath and Denarius and all these things. It's really important for us to sort of onboard the player in a way that doesn't overwhelm them. And not even just like narratively, like the game is a complex game, right? So like the prologue is like moment to moment built to teach you things slowly throughout your first hour in the game. We never want to feel like you're holding your hand, but as sort of like things come online, the game gets more complex. That was a big sort of lift, as you've seen in the prologue. It slowly rolls out the not only the mechanics, but the story and the tone, the general vibe. But it's also really important that we pay homage and respect the franchise. Like Diablo 4 is the fourth game, and there's a lot of things that have come before us we want to pay homage to and respect in ways that if you're a super fan and you understand all the sort of little lore references, you'll be like, oh, I know who that is, or oh, I know what that's going on there. Like, you can see how we've built upon the foundation that's been laid down by previous games.
Yeah. I'm curious, Naz, to hear your thoughts about the process of what, because I think a lot of folks, when they see your title as a game producer, they're like, what does a game producer do? I have a little bit of understanding of what that is, having worked in a studio. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts about, like, in these components of the game, what are the things that you're kind of working on to make sure that the team is, you know, finding their groove and getting things done and getting the things they need to be successful? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I use this analogy all the time. Harrison knows it, and I'm sure he's very tired of it at this point. But I like to use this train conductor analogy to describe what a game producer really does. And for the longest time, I didn't really know what game production was up until I was introduced to it in university. And essentially, I like to think of the train conductor as all of the directors that are responsible for the game. So we have the creative director, the, you know, technical directors, and they are the ones that essentially have the vision for what this game is supposed to be. They have this high-level idea, and they want to be able to achieve any of the goals that they have set. And in each of the little train cars behind them are the designers. The designers, the artists. All of our talent, basically. Everybody who has worked on this game, its art, its design. And the producers are, I like to say, the train conductor's right-hand men. And they are the ones that, you know, they take this vision that's provided by the directors and they're like, okay, this is great. So how do we get there? Do we take this path to the destination? Do we take that path to the destination? What's the most efficient way to get to, you know, our end goal? And what that translates to in Diablo 4 is making sure that, you know, our amazing designers like Harrison have everything they need from other disciplines to make sure that he's able to do the work that he needs to make sure we have robust quests, a robust campaign, cool side quests. It's really quest design as a discipline. It intersects with so many different disciplines. It's we request things from, you know, our character art team, for example, if we want to use unique characters in our side quests. We work with the dungeon design team to make sure our dungeons are of high fidelity and they stand out and they're memorable. It's really a cross-disciplinary work in every way, shape, or form.
I love hearing you describe it that way, because I think for the laymans who are like, I don't know how any of this works, I don't know what that means, that was the perfect way to kind of describe that. And I love hearing you talk about that interconnectedness between teams and the work that you get a chance to do and the work that Harrison and the rest of the team get a chance to do. And I think for a game like this, I'm always really interested in the chicken and the egg part of that conversation, right? So you wind up having, you know, Harrison, in the ways that you and your teams are building things. What's that relationship look like to folks like maybe the art team, right? When we're thinking about zone design or we're thinking about campaign beats that we want to make sure to hit. Are those folks coming to you with, here's this really cool concept design that we have of this new space, can you write something for it? Or is it something where you and the narrative team and parts of the narrative team are thinking about, oh, we really haven't delved into this part of Diablo lore, we need this to be represented in some physical space within the game? Talk to me a little bit about what that kind of back and forth and that collaborative effort looks like for y'all.
Yeah, you kind of nailed it, right? Like, it's kind of both. So it depends on what we're working on. So the sort of high-level themes of, say, how was our swamp zone, right? Mm. We have a creative brief that the creative director has given in terms of, like, here are the things that matter to the creative director about themes and characters and general vibe, general tone, or things that they want to avoid. Like, it's not about these things. It's not about, like, actively avoid these things. And then, so they've built a kind of a box for us to work in. And then the campaign beats, obviously, again, come from the lead writers and creative director in terms of, like, here's what the main campaign of the game is going to do here. The characters are going to be involved. Here's the beats that we want to hit narratively. And then the quest designers will sort of figure out, okay, well, what does that mean in terms of gameplay? We know that, you know, Loreth has to go here, and we want him to reveal this thing about Lilith, and we want the player to have these revelations. But what are you actually doing? Because Diablo is a game about killing monsters, getting loot, that kind of stuff. So, like, how do we translate that into gameplay? So a lot of times we'll start with the high-level stuff that the creative director wants to do, and we'll break it down into gameplay beats. But a lot of times for things like side quests, for, like, general, like, this the tone of this village or this swampy area versus the high mountainous area, we'll partner with artists and say, like, I don't know what this POI is, point of interest is. Like, it just needs to do these things narratively. It needs to tell this specific story. And then we go to the artist and be like, you guys are like, come up with dope ideas. Like, what kinds of cool ideas do you have to tell those stories? And we actively involve the art team to sort of like fill in the gaps. It's really important that we don't just come in with like a big old script and just dump it on their table and be like, here you go, like, make it look good, I guess. Because it's a partnership, like Nas mentioned. So, and they'll, you know, we'll get some really cool concept art and we're like, oh man, I hadn't even imagined, like, that's got to go into the game. I remember a very specific POI in the Dry Steps. We got a piece of concept art. It's big, like, evil demon head.
Yeah.
It's like this big grinning demon head. And I was like, well, that's got to go into the game. I don't know what that's going to be, but like, it's so cool that we've got to find a spot for it, right? So we built that POI. We put some sort of cool gameplay moments in there. So it absolutely is kind of a cycle. So as we're building the campaign, there's lots of empty spots for the artists to come in and say, like, I had a cool idea last night. I built, like, check this out. I built it in the engine. Look how cool it is. And we're like, that's amazing. Like, it's got to go here. Or that's really cool, but like, it doesn't fit the vibe or the tone of the, like, the narrative stuff that's going on here. Like, put it in your pocket. Let's find a spot for it, maybe in a different zone or in, you know, another area of the game. We have to sort of like find that balance.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear, you know, your thoughts about that part of the equation, Naz, as well. From the, you know, one of the things I always love to hear people talk about is how they also get to influence those layers of game making, while that may not be their full, like, work focus in their 9-to-5 fully, but you're being able to kind of influence some of those. Either, you know, you're like, hey, in, you know, in your work Slack, you're like, hey, I had a weird dream about this thing, can we figure, like, how is that work for you as well in your role of, you know, how are you also bringing ideas and pieces of kind of gameplay and lore to the table for the rest of the team too in the role that you have?
So one thing I really love about this team is that we always encourage people to give feedback on, you know, any content that's in the game. So it could be the campaign. Let's say I'm a concept artist and I read something about the campaign and I'm like, I don't really like that beat. Let me see if I could suggest something else. And, you know, we never discourage that. We always say, yes, by all means. You know, we bring so many different perspectives to the table. That's the really great thing about having such a diverse team, is that everyone has different thoughts and different ideas. And that ultimately contributes to the coolness of our game. So, you know, whether I'm a producer or a designer or an artist, I know that my thoughts and ideas around the campaign or side quests will always be heard. And I have even, you know, as a producer, even though I'm not a designer, I've reached out to, you know, folks on the quest design team. And I'm like, hey, it would be cool if we do a side quest that you know, revolves around this certain topic. And I've never heard someone, you know, turn me down, say, no, that's a dumb idea, or that's, you know. We actually have kind of like a running list of ideas that we pull from, and we call these nice to have quests. So things that are, you know, a dream that we had, for example, like you mentioned, or a really cool idea that we've wanted to do for a while, and we don't throw them out. We keep them in a list, and if we have time, we pull from them. So that's, yeah, I find that really valuable.
Yeah, I love to hear that, because that's one of the things that when, you know, I think about the process of making games, and I think a lot of, you know, players think about is, you know, these are really intricate things that you're all building. They have the ability to not only be these kind of tentpole moments for players that add to the lore, but also provide those like super memorable moments that people will be talking about for years to come, and things that kind of drive the story along. When you're building those layers of that cake, Harrison, you and the rest of your team, are you seeing stuff that you're like, oh, that's going to be a thing? Like, that's going to be something that people are going to be like, oh yeah, there was a twist here, or there was a thing here that we know is going to resonate with the audience in a much bigger way. How do you kind of think about those layers of building story and quests and even the zones that are, you know, in the space too?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I don't know if we like think about like, oh man, this is the moment, this is it. But we definitely once we get like to playtesting, and people react, you're like, holy crap, like that beat in that quest, wow, I didn't see that coming, and you're like, oh cool, like that's resonating, awesome. And then the more people play it and you get feedback and you're like, it sort of like paints a line of terms of like, oh, everyone really, really reacted to this moment. Like the flayed guy in that one quest in Fracture Peaks, people are like, this is incredible. So you kind of start to get a feeling of like, all right, I think this is good. This has got legs. Like this is a thing people really like. We definitely try and make sure that we have quests for lots of different types of players. So there's lots of players who like really in-depth, narratively heavy, 20-minute, 30-minute side quests where you get to learn a character's sort of situation. They go through a kind of a character arc, and ultimately there's sort of like a thing we want you to feel. And some people really like really simple quests where it's like you just pick them up, go kill some goatmen, they drop some bones, and you're kind of like, you know, like you're multitasking and think about a lot of other stuff, and it's just really sort of snacky, popcorny quests. So we don't want to do too much of one or the other because we have a lot of different players who like different things in the game. Mm-hmm. So we try and serve a lot of different people. So, you know, I'll think, okay, is there a way that we can reference something from D2 or D3 in this, either in the campaign or in a side quest? Like, is there a character we can bring forward that people who have played the game would really enjoy? We try and think about that stuff, but we don't want to over-index on that because mm-hmm. then if you're not like in that club, you feel like left out a little bit. You know, you don't want to be like, everyone's laughing at a joke and I don't get it. Yep. So we have to be very careful about how we deploy that sort of thing. So for the few times that you will see characters from past games, we try and sort of reintroduce them. So if you've never met them before, like Lorath, you don't need to know who that is. But for the people who played D3 and played Reaper of Souls, they recognize him. They recognize his pole arm. They recognize all the things he's talking about. You get a little extra bonus there, but we don't want to over-index on that. So it's a balance. And again, like Nas said, it's just playtesting, bringing in people from other departments who might not be massive Diablo fans, bringing in people who are super fans, and sort of judging generally like, hey, if you've never played the game before, you're putting a lot of concepts in my brain right away. Like, is there a way that we can, like, we don't want to delete that stuff. It's really important. Can we move it? Can we introduce that stuff maybe slightly later in the story? So in the prologue, for example, we don't really get into Inarius and all of that stuff until you've already met Lorath. We know about who Lilith is. Like, we have the moment where we stop at the damaged statue, and he's like, hey, let's talk about the statue and Inarius and the Cathedral of Light. Like, we try and parcel out those bits and pieces so we don't overwhelm the player. But it's a balancing act for sure to make sure that there's lots of different types of side quests and stories to interact with in the game.
I love that you talked about the kind of, you know, how do you figure out the good way to balance out pulling things from the past and then, you know, filling in good spots for new storytelling moments? I know that must be really hard because you have a very, very smart audience who knows everything probably just as well as the rest of the team does in terms of lore. Are there things that you're like, we never want to go back there again? Or does it feel like are you finding that sometimes you have to figure out, and you talked about that balance of making sure that you don't kind of like jump into a spot that was maybe itchy for the fandom, you know, when they played a previous game, you're like, we don't want to touch that hornet's nest thing anymore. You know, how does it also feel to kind of figure out what's that, again, you talked about the balance of pulling things from the past, but also kind of filling in with new content there.
Yeah.
Is that a part of the process from the beginning of saying, we know we want to touch that one part that we didn't really flesh out before, but we also want to make sure that we add something to that? Is that coming in really early in the process? Is that something that when you're building? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I got excited.
No.
From day one, the leadership was like, you know who we haven't explored in Diablo yet? Is the creators of Sanctuary. And because this was the first game where you get to like walk Sanctuary truly for the first time, like no loading screens, like top to bottom, you can just walk Sanctuary for the first time. They were like, Sanctuary is a character, and it makes sense to bring in the creators of Sanctuary, Inarius and Lilith, as our big main characters. And we haven't explored them really in the Diablo game yet. So there was, from day one, they were like, you know, there's meat on the table that we haven't really gotten to use yet. We don't want to just kind of tread old ground. We want to make sure that the ground feels familiar, but we want to tread new ground. So I think to your earlier question, we don't necessarily go like, we never want to touch that again. But we try and think about what's right for this story. What's right for the Diablo 4 story that we want to bring forward? What's the story we want to tell about Sanctuary and about the characters in Sanctuary that pulls from D1, pulls from D2, pulls from D3, right? Like, those are the things that we want to bring forward, but we're never like, ooh, can't touch that. That was a bad idea, because that's not really how we think about making games. It's almost like if you were like, the game's identity is just not XYZ, then it doesn't really have an identity. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels just like people trying to sidestep something, and it doesn't really have its own true identity. So it was really important from the beginning of the game's inception, even before I joined the team, that we're not just putting together a list of what it's not. We need to make sure we need to put together a list of what it is and what we want it to be.
Yeah. I like that answer a lot, because I think that's the thing that I struggle with for y'all, is that thing of being like, I know how an audience can be kind of, you know, mean about, like, you didn't put this thing in, or this thing is a smidge different than what I remember the lore to be. So it's, I always over index on, like, are y'all okay? in terms of that stuff. Naz, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about, like, I'm always big on inspiration when it comes to game building. I think the work that you and the rest of the team get a chance to do is it over indexes on being able to think about anything and everything and kind of pull that into the world. Is there, you know, in the time that you've been at the studio, have you found there's some special sauce to making a really interesting zone or quest line or like side quest that you feel like you love to see within the game, that you're like, oh, we're really nailing this version of building these kinds of moments?
I think personally, the special sauce for me at least is our attention to detail and making sure that we're telling stories that our players would love. To be a part of. And, you know, Diablo 4 isn't just a game, isn't just Blizzard's game. It's our fan base's game. We want to make sure that they're happy with what we're providing them. And we really take that to heart. We make sure that with every side quest that we feature in D4, with the campaign, with all of the other features that we have the player in mind. Is this something that they would find interesting? Is this something that would be memorable to them? Or is this something that, you know, we can make a spectacle moment for the player to always remember? And to me, I think that's what makes our game really special.
I mean, I even loved like the small, you know, look at this moment where the camera turns and does like a spin towards an element or a part of the world that you're kind of overlooking to kind of see, you know, where those things are. Was that something that, you know, the story team kind of brought to the table? Was that a thing that the technology of making games in 2023 and, you know, the years prior to during the process, where you were like, ooh, I want to add this into it because we have this isometric viewpoint? Was that a conversation in there too, to kind of like help build the story and way you kind of consume it in that way too?
Yeah, the thing is, we have so much to showcase in Diablo 4. We have a bunch of really gorgeous environments that our environment artists have worked so hard on, and we wanted to be able to showcase that in a pretty unique way, which is why we have some of these camera overrides that you're talking about, where the camera kind of pans and it shows all of this really gorgeous landscape. And it's something that we wanted to do with D4 because we have so many different and unique biomes. We have different cities that have different architecture, and it would have been a crime not to, you know, showcase that to our players.
Yeah. Harrison, any thoughts about that layer of how the storytelling is coming together?
Yeah, it's a group effort, right? Like, you know, it was one of those things where we, like Nas said, we know that there's so many cool things that we build for our camera. Like, our game is built to be seen from that angle. But when you're in an art review and you see like a bigger shot of like a cathedral or a waterfall or whatever, and you're like, it's a shame we can't show it to people like this, because it's just so much detail. Like, there's so much detail. And we try to find locations where we can really, in a dramatic way that sort of fits what we're trying to do with the story. Like, we don't want to just kind of throw them out into the world. We want to really use them for like dramatic moments of, like, you know, you're at the bottom of the hill and you're looking up at the vampire castle kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we really want to make it feel like a big impactful moments. So it felt like a really good opportunity to, add some of that newness. Like, what can we do to the Diablo franchise that adds value, kind of like add some newness to the formula without sort of breaking expectations from the player? And this was one of those things that felt like it really fit.
Yeah. I am infinitely excited to see where this story continues to move. I think, you know, having gotten to play the demo and the server slam, by the way, it was just so smooth. I was like, holy crap, there's so many folks in here. We're all just wrecking these monsters and it feels so good. So again, kudos to the networking and hardware team on that, because that's really hard to be able to do with that many people playing. But it made me think again about, like, what other stuff are you all consuming that's kind of pulling, you know, again, inspiration for this world and stuff? You know, are there any movies, are there any, you know, things other outside of the world of Diablo that you're pulling into this world that's really informing aesthetic and quests and the way that the campaign has kind of been formulated? Any things that in your mind during the process of building the game that you were like, ooh, this external thing, I want to pull this into the game somehow? Is there anything that was like that for you, Naz?
I think for me, we pulled a lot of inspiration from other Gothic works, because ultimately Diablo as a series is a Gothic ARPG, in that it kind of talks about all of these different struggles that people are facing, especially in Diablo 4 on Sanctuary. We cover a lot of, you know, tough topics around different struggles that different towns are encountering, and the theme is dark. You know, it's around a struggle and a battle between angels and demons. So it is Gothic in its nature. Harrison, I'm curious about what you think.
I think that you nailed it. It's so we pull from all sorts of stuff, right? Like we're gamers, we play games, we're watching television shows and movies, and you can see all the books behind me, right? Like there's tons of stuff that we will pull just a moment and be like, oh, like this moment is cool, or like this shot is awesome, or like this, the way these characters talk about this specific thing is, and it really inspires me. We don't want to do like pastiche. Like we try not to do like references like to things, because I think it can tend to pull the player out of the game. But you know, I have a notes app on my phone, and anytime I'm listening to music, or it just evokes an image in my brain, or I'm reading a book, or any sort of dark sort of fantasy or dark sort of low fantasy media, there's always interesting things to pull from that. But even things that aren't like tonally right, like you can watch a show that's sort of happy and there's a touching moment between characters, and you're like, I really like how they did this character, this sort of like nice moment where this character, you know, made amends with this other character, and I see how they did that. And there's lots of really cool inspirations in terms of like writing and narrative stuff to pull from all sorts of media, not just dark stuff. But we do have our like tone Bible, like our sort of like how you tell a dark story, what dark means, because dark can be, it's such a subjective thing. Is it visually dark? What's emotionally dark? Is it because everything has a price to pay? Like there's lots of different ways to interpret that. So we do have our own sort of internal documentation on like what makes a dark story. But it's also really important that the story can't be dark all the time, right? Because you start to become numb to it and you're just like, what's the point of doing all this fighting demons when Sanctuary just sucks so much? Like everyone in it sucks and everything here, like I don't want to be here. So we want to make sure that there are moments of like, the people are worth saving. Like the land is beautiful. Like there are people who, there are happy endings to certain stories, because eventually, you need to have those ups to have the downs again, right? Like you need to have moments of levity or moments of brightness so that you can start to feel when the roller coaster goes over the edge and starts going back down again. You can't go down infinitely, right? Yeah. So it was really important that it's not just like darkness for darkness's sake. Like we're not trying to like check a bunch of boxes off. We're really trying to tell a cohesive story with characters that feel fleshed out and real and grounded is a word we use a lot, in sort of real human emotion and real trauma and real grief. And like these things are real, right? So trying to ground those things in the characters and sort of real emotion is really important to the team.
It also feels like, you know, and you two are working on some of the parts where you can fully really kind of level that up in a way for the player with the visual layers and the story layers of that stuff. Like even, you know, in the early cutscenes with Lilith, there's a feeling that she also doesn't necessarily have a soft side, but she is thinking about legacy and thinking about the folks that she's bound to in all of those parts of the story that I'm really excited to kind of dig into. I'm hoping that there will be a grassy knoll somewhere in Sanctuary that, that deserves to be one. And as you, you know, talking about angels and demons, you perfectly described, you know, what's happening in Sanctuary and American Idol. It's the same thing. They two intertwine really easily. It's the same kind of concept. Thank you both for spending time with me today. I am infinitely excited about this game. I was telling the folks on the PR side and Blizzard side earlier. I was like, you've ruined me. I am just going to be in here all day, just beating stuff up and being really excited about it.
It's a big game.
I am so excited. Yeah. Very, very excited. You know, Barbarian. I'm a Barbarian stan now. It has begun. It has begun. Naz and Harrison, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. Absolutely. We definitely want to see if we can snag folks from the team after the game is out to talk more about how the audience has kind of come to it. And again, just want to celebrate both of you and the work that you've put into this game, because even this small sliver of stuff that we've gotten a chance to play has been brilliant. So thank you again for hanging with me today. Everybody at home, give those folks a round of applause and get ready for Diablo 4, because it's going to be dope. We'll be back with more conversations and more Spawn on Me right after this.